You got the drive, guys. Kyle Draper's traveling with the team today. He should be joining us at some point. We're going to get some Drapes takes. You got Jay, you got Whitey, Simone helping us out today. Did not have a lot of faith down the stretch last night. Understandable. I don't know why. I just felt like the Kings got this one. I don't know what it was on the chat here. Ryan Williams Art says, Whitey, I never felt they were going to lose either. The reason is I felt the Grizz were a lesser team and we had a defensive-minded guy on the floor, and his name was Keon. And I'm not like bragging from a fan's perspective. Like, I knew they were going to win. Just honestly, thinking back on how I felt, at no point did I really think, oh, the Kings are going to lose. I don't know why. Maybe I didn't give the Grizzlies enough respect. I just couldn't believe that the shorthanded Grizzlies could win that game. Compio says the Memphis coach is a very good coach. He can pick up 10 G leaguers and give battle to NBA clubs, and he certainly did that. And they were very well coached. I mean, even they defended at a pretty high level, and when they got into their sets, they ran their offense, and Sabonis did a great job defending Jaren Jackson Jr. But they still almost won that game. That's okay. That's fine. No.
It was that Sabonis, that turnover for me. That's when I got scared.
Somebody else mentioned that. I think Amadrock here. Yeah, the turnover between Sabonis to Fox was hard to watch. It's funny you mentioned that, Simone. I almost called you Sabone.
I know.
Sabonis. Because I asked Aaron about that after the game. And I asked him, he had the little miscommunication. And they had some words there, which is understandable. And I asked, this is the way I found it's best to ask, would you be willing to share anything that was discussed there? And I asked him, what does it say about the team that you're able to win that game, come back and win that? He didn't want to go there at all, which tells me it was probably Sabonis' fault. He said, oh, that happens all the time. That was nothing. That was no big deal. And then we
did hear that.
Yeah. Oh, did you? Okay. Yeah. And he said, yeah, and then you're just on to the next play, which is a great way to answer it. But you could see at the time, fans couldn't believe it. And I think it was De'Aaron. I think he kind of barked at him a little. I don't know what he said. Probably like, what are you doing? But they pulled it out.
They pulled it off.
It was their night. It's a good night, or good day, I should say, I think, to talk about the officiating. Because when you talk about the officiating after you lose, it looks like you're whining. We need to talk about the officiating, though, and it's a good day because they won. And like I said earlier, it's possible the way they're officiating games now might actually be helping them. But we definitely need to discuss it because there are some things going on that are unusual. Before we get to that, though, I want to answer a question that I got today on X. This was from Mr. McFunk, and he asked me on X, he said, Whitey, I like the win. I welcome the win. We needed the win. But damn, why did we need a Herculean overtime effort to beat this injury-riddled G League Memphis squad at home? He says, Whitey, you and Drapes need to give us answers. Bring it! And Drapes will have his answer with Drapes Takes when he joins us today. I think what it comes down to, Mr. McFunk, a couple things. We talked about some of these with Brendan. When the Kings don't shoot the three ball well, they are already at a disadvantage. It's like it's a good team. It's not the deepest roster. And the number of ways they can beat you, they don't have as many ways to beat you as better teams like, the Celtics. They're not there yet. One of the ways they beat you is with the three ball. So they didn't shoot the three ball well last night. So there's one way is like, okay, well, they're at a disadvantage there. Then you combine that with the turnovers. And some of these were just bad, bad turnovers. Some of them, I think we had, how many by, Keon. Everybody loves Keon. And I've been championing Keon for months. But he had three turnovers. That's still a relative weakness in his game. So he had 18 turnovers. Overall, total 20 turnovers, 27 points. So the Kings, jump shooting team, not making shots. And then you're turning the ball over and you're handing the Grizzlies 27 points. Well, there's two ways where you're basically saying, all right, we're going to make it easier on you guys. Then on top of that, you had opportunities for guys like Keegan to have a good game. And he wasn't there last night. He didn't shoot the ball well. And the Grizzlies came in, as teams so often do against the Kings, and they played like, what do we got to lose? We're not even supposed to win this game. Really, and you can see that frees up NBA players. After the game, Taylor Jenkins, our coach, he didn't say, oh, we could have. He said, we were great. They lost, but he knows that they had no business coming that close. So players, NBA players especially, even if they're relatively new NBA players, they play in a situation like that, and it seems to free them, and they get momentum. So I think those three things, plus maybe right now the Kings get a little tight, given that these games are so important, and they have lost them before. I think you can see them sometimes start to process late in the game, like looking up at the scoreboard, we're going to lose this game, are we? They talk about that. Malik said after the game, he said, my mindset was, we're don't lose. Don't lose. They know. They're keenly aware that they lose these games. So I think that gets to them a little bit. Maybe they tighten up. But bottom line, they were able to overcome those things because they're playing with a lot more confidence now too. And I think that starts at the defensive end. So you don't make shots. You turn the ball over. The other team goes nuts a little bit. And all of a sudden you find yourself in a dogfight. But that's the way it's going to be the rest of the year. There's no such thing, as I've said a million times now, there's no such thing as a bad win. There's no such thing as a good loss. You know, oh, they lost, but they didn't. No, you got to win these games. So they won the game last night, onward to the next game. Now, as far as the officiating goes, it's really curious how physical things are getting. The officials are letting so much go. Marcus Smart obviously has a reputation of being a guy that he is going to let the officials know how he feels, and he gets teed up a lot. He went ballistic last night. And I'm not sure exactly which call he was upset about, but I'm guessing he probably had reason to be upset. We're seeing that a lot now. Basically, what's going on in the NBA is there are fouls that are being committed that the officials are just deciding that's not a foul anymore, or at least tonight. And there's a lot been written about this. I know Simone just sent me the Tom Haberstroh piece. I know The Ringer wrote about this. We talked about it last week. It looks like the NBA, and they're saying that we didn't make any decree or anything, but you can see that probably in an effort to even things out scoring and defensive-wise, you know, scoring is just through the roof this year. Looks like they're trying to even up the offense and the defense. So one way you can easily do that, if you let more fouls go, if you don't call as many fouls, that alone makes it tougher on the offense. Also, it bogs down the offense because they're being held and grabbed more. That slows down the pace, and there's another way. There's two ways right there that you're evening things up a little bit just by not calling as many fouls. In theory, that makes sense, but when you watch it in practice, it's terrible. It's not basketball, and the players are aware of it. We've mentioned a million times. De'Aaron Fox keeps talking about it. You know, he says, well, we can pretend they're not calling it differently, but they are. It's going on, and it's changing the product that we're enjoying. Is it changing it to the point where something is lost? That Knicks game, you certainly could say that. That Knicks game was, you know, credit to the Knicks. They played through it. But that was at times hard to watch. I mean, Katie and Drapes, they did a great job. They showed great restraint. You know, and early in the game, when Sabonis basically is being tackled, wrapped up, and you can't blame the players. I mean, if I'm trying to guard somebody and I have a hard time guarding them and I'm able to grab them, and they don't call it, you're going to keep pushing it, right? I'm going to grab more, So you can't really blame the players. But I'm not sure where this is headed. I'm not sure it's headed for a good place. And I think already here in just a couple of games with the Kings the last week or so, we've seen some examples, of how this thing is starting to go the wrong way and unraveling, and it's not really great basketball that we're seeing. That said, it's also possible that this is something that's going to work in favor of the Kings. As I said earlier, you got a team that's not a great defensive team. Now I'm allowed to grab you a little bit. I can't really guard you, but now I can grab you a little bit. Okay, well, guess what? I'm going to do that. And that could be one of the reasons, in addition to Keon Ellis playing so well, maybe those are some of the reasons that the Kings are starting to defend a little bit better. 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. Jay, are you back now? I was just wondering what you thought of
it. Yeah, I'm back, brother. Yeah. I had to step away, you know, do what I do for Whitey.
Thank you, Simone. Yeah. I wanted to see what you thought of how physical this is. You strike me as a guy that is a fan of physical basketball. It's getting really physical. I'm not sure I like it.
As a fan, you said physical what? Say that one more time.
Basketball, sure. I'm sorry. I know you're just getting your headphones on there. the games are getting really physical. We saw it last night. We saw it really in the Knicks game. And I know some people like that. There's some people that say, I loved it in the 80s when Michael Jordan played and it was 88 to 84. That was basketball. It was, to me, it's like that was terrible. That's why the league changed it. It wasn't basketball. It was like wrestling with a few jump shots thrown in. But you strike me as a type that might appreciate a more physical brand.
Yeah, I think you're barking up the right tree there, brother. I like the Davis brothers clotheslining Horace Grant and, you know, then D. Rodman pushing on the X-Men, Xavier McDaniel. You know, I'm kind of in between. I'm like the middle. I'm like Iverson. Bring me in the mid-90s, carry me out to about the early 2000s.
Yeah.
And I'm out. Like,
yeah.
Today, as much as I like, you know, I enjoy watching basketball, it definitely is soft, you know, for lack of a better word. It's definitely softer
than it used to be. I'm okay with that.
It's charming, bro.
But there's no, I mean, you can't, it's indisputable.
It's tissue paper.
Yeah.
I mean, it's real life doctor's cotton. You know when you go to the doctor's office and they give you that nice, fluffy, soft cotton? It like, yeah, that's what basketball is right now.
You're not supposed to. It's supposed to be a non-contact sport originally. The guy that invented it.
Well, he was wrong. He also had buckets that didn't allow the ball to come through. We've evolved, and I understand that. And that's part of it. Like, if Drapes was here, he'd be screaming at me about being involved. And, Jay, that's 25 years ago. Like, I get that part. I'm not saying that. I also appreciate the way the game is now. And so I take it for the love of what it is. But if you're giving me, like, the golden era, yeah, give me 96. I'm coming in with Iverson with the Reebok questions, and I'm taking it to, you know, early 2000s, 04, 05, where you still had, like, I missed a post game. Do you miss the post game at all?
Well, not something that I was, you know, spent a lot of time working on myself, but yeah.
For watching just, it.
Yes, because it gave the game a little variety.
Yes.
And it wasn't everybody trying to score the same way every freaking time down the floor.
Very true. The other part of it, too, for me is I don't like the fact that a lot of people, when you get, like, to me right now, playing hard, a skill, kind of in your face, rah-rah guy, like, that right now is a skill for an NBA player. You know, Draymond has capitalized on, I'm going to tell you like it is, or I'm going to get in your face. Marcus Smart, you talked about Marcus Smart here a couple of minutes ago. The Dylan Brooks. Like, those guys were just regular ball players back in, you know, 1997.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not even going back to, you know, 83 and 79. Like, no, I'm just
saying. You don't think Draymond could have played in that era? Is that what
absolutely.
You're saying?
No, what I'm saying to you is that's a skill. Pat Beverly, Draymond, Dylan Brooks, you know, guys like that.
Uh-huh.
People pay those guys to be a goon now, where there were 58 goons. You know, the star was a goon at one point. Reggie Miller would choke you out. Michael Jordan would slap you. So what I'm saying to you is that still carried on in the late 90s, you know, in early 2000s.
I would differ with what you said this way. I understand your point. I think there have always been quote-unquote goons, but I think now a goon is somebody that might look at you and say, what are you going to do about it?
Yes.
And in that, the day that you're talking about and earlier, the goon would just punch you.
Yeah, you get clotheslined. But that's my point. I think you're making my point, Whitey, is this.
But how is that better?
Because everybody's not playing the same. Like you said, everybody's the same. We all want somebody who's long, a 3-and-D guy. How many times have we been talking about 3-and-D guys throughout the league for the last 10 years? Everybody
countless,
wants a 3-and-D
guy. Countless times.
A 3-and-D
right.
guy. I need a guy who's 6'5" with a wingspan of 7 feet.
And 3-and-D
guys. And they can shoot. Right.
Yeah.
That's what the whole NBA
fours.
Wants.
Stretch fours. I need a stretch fours. Four to 3-and-D.
There you go. Like, There's no point guard a lot, right? There's very few point guards in the game. Yeah, there's very few, you know, two guards who play defense, and that's kind of how they get around. What I'm saying to you, there's more variety back then. Like, right now, the skill, don't get me wrong, because we've been saying all this on social network, the skill is at a high level. I'm not taking that away.
Uh-huh.
That's one thing I'm going to say. The dribbling, the Jamal Crawfords, the Kyrie Irvins, you know, like those type of people. I'm not saying Kenny Anderson and Rod Strickland and Tim Hardaway, because Duke, Pistol Pete, cats had handle back then.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it's at a higher level. I appreciate that. But the other part of it is we got people You try to go dunk on somebody, you got 7 foot three guys laying the ball up. For what? And they're right under the rim. That's terrible. That's soft. That's not good basketball. No matter what a 21-year-old wants to tell you, that's not good basketball. Hmm. 7 foot three laying the ball up off the glass? No. Hammer it down, brother.
By the way, did you see what the Ant-Man did last night? We'll talk about that.
He put somebody in the 6 feet deep.
Yes, yes. And if they're going to allow players to play more physically, does that help the Kings? We're back with that and more. It's the Drive Guys, Sacktown Sports. Everybody's wondering about Kevin Huerter. Looks like we may have an update courtesy of Sean Cunningham. And let's see here. Had it a minute ago, and it's disappearing on me. I apologize. Do you have it, Jay? I had it here a minute ago, and I lost it on my phone.
Yeah, we got it right here.
Here
it is. Okay. Simone.
I'm sorry.
In the business.
Yeah, I apologize.
What she does. According to Sean Cunningham, the hardest working man, according to Kyle Drapes and the Sacramento media, Kings listing Kevin Huerter out for tomorrow in Toronto as he has suffered a left shoulder dislocation. Sasha, you know my guy, Sasha.
Yeah, Mr. Vazankov. Has
been upgraded to questionable with an ankle sprain.
Okay.
That's Simone.
Yeah, thank
Beautiful
you, Simone.
Miss Rickford.
Thank you, Sean Cunningham. Single. Thank you. What's that?
I said people always ask, is Simone single? She's no longer single.
She's married?
She's not, but, you know. Don't tell that to my guy.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Stay out of business, Whitey.
Well, you brought it up.
I wasn't putting it out there for you. I was putting it out there for the listeners.
I'm just asking the questions that I'm assuming the listeners
Well, they shouldn't
have
the opportunity to ask that.
Yeah.
They're not credentialed.
All right. I gotcha. Kevin Huerter out tomorrow. Left shoulder dislocation. I know that's a surprise to some of us because we thought we saw, he grabbed his wrist. But as Brendan Nunes explained to us, that happens sometimes, but just the angle of everything happening and actually put the stress on his shoulder. So dislocated shoulder, we'll have to look that up. And I'm sure there are grades of dislocations, and that'll determine, you know, how severe it is. It'll determine how long he's out. I don't know. To me, that almost sounds, relatively speaking, like good news. Because when he first got hurt, I was thinking something a lot worse with the, you know, with his bones in his
the
wrist
way it looked.
Or something. Yeah.
Yeah. But like I say, I kind of go back to the shin goon injury here
it's
that we saw.
Point.
And when you look at it, it was like, oh, my goodness. You can't tell me something's not broke or fractured or chipped or something in there, you know. And it just came back as, you know, a dislocation, a sprained ankle, so to say.
Right. The ankle was the worst, and it was just badly sprained.
Right. And so when it, you know, of course, we have the opportunity to slow things down, slow-mo, pause it, see it, watch it, and it looked bad. But the hope for me was, hopefully it's like Shingun. It's not as bad as it looks.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like that. And I don't, you know, again, like you said, we're not the orthopedic, we're not a doctor, but a dislocation, I don't want to say that's a win because he's hurt, but the way it looked compared to the outcome—
I agree.
I think gives you hope.
Yeah, it's always dangerous to speculate, and we don't have all the details, and frankly, it's none of our business, all the details, but dislocation over, you know, what it looked like initially, look, he was in such pain, it was not hard to imagine something catastrophic, but he should be back. Again, we await further word on
postseason, baby?
Yeah, at the very least. Now, as far as Sasha... I mean, that's a little worrisome. He's questionable, which is better. Okay, so he could be available. But, you know, he's sprained both ankles here. So, you know, I'm remembering Steph before the Warriors won anything. And Steph Curry's like every other week's like he sprained his ankle. He sprained his other ankle. You know, it's like, oh, he's just got bad ankles. So hopefully he's able to get that situation stabilized. Because the Kings clearly could use Mr. Vazankov right now.
Absolutely. In this place, and I'm almost, you know, Keon has played his way to being a starter, I think. Most people would agree. Would you agree with that, Whitey, right now?
Like, yeah.
Would you prefer, even if Sasha was available, would you still want to see Keon play? I mean, start?
Yeah, Sasha couldn't start back there. I mean, you'd have to move some things around, but we don't even know. He probably doesn't even have much. He's not conditioning-wise now, right?
Because
you're recovering from sprained ankles. It's tough to get your, you know, your wind.
Yeah, that's a lot of bike riding.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of... A lot less running, basically, is what you're kind of getting to. I would like to see Sasha just to see, because we're also pushing up, and this is a tough, and I'm kind of trying to get to this point, Whitey, so bear with me here. I think with Sasha, we want to know what he is. The tough part is, if you asked anyone, and I can ask you, we can ask Drapes, we can ask listeners, 916-339-1140, I don't think anyone has a great idea what he is, but we're also on a playoff push. And so it's kind of going to be tricky in my mind. Now, they might have a great plan down there, you know, at the G1C and the coaching staff, but it's going to be tricky in my mind, Whitey, to implement Sasha right in the thick of things, especially as you have alluded to, if he's not really in the best condition, mm-hmm. he's going to play in spurts probably, you know, and that might not be the best opportunity for this team moving forward for trying to make, you know, the fifth or sixth position.
The downside, I see it, aside from the health, is that the defense has been playing better, and that's still a real challenge for him, the defensive end. Of course, that's
point.
No surprise.
Great point.
The upside is if he can shoot, and we know when he's playing well and feeling well, he can shoot.
Oh, yeah.
There's always every NBA team. It's kind of like pitching in baseball. You can name any team. Could they use pitching? Yes.
Yeah.
No matter who they are. And it's any NBA team. Could they use more shooting? Oh, yes. And, you know, you've seen the Kings at times this year where we saw it for a period last night where the offense bogs down. Even though the offense has been excellent this year, there still have been periods, quarters or less of a quarter, less than a quarter, where it's like the offense just bogs down. So it's nice. It would be nice if you had somebody who can come in and make a few threes. So that's the hope. And I don't think that's unrealistic to hope that he could still bring them that, even this late in the year when he hasn't had a chance to do much.
Yeah, I think the second half to that for me is I kind of agree with you a little bit, but I also say this. You always
kind
have
kind of agree.
Yeah,
huh?
Because I just, and that's my part of saying I don't know what he is. As much as we know he's a shooter, I'm not sure he's a shooter. I don't think he's shown us that we can rely on him in spurts, which is what he's getting ready to play.
He still has to prove he can do that at the NBA level, yeah.
And then the second part of that for me is my eye on the prize, which is down the road, the future. You know, we talked about Malik Monk quite a bit here on this show and what he means to the Kings, you know, hopefully locking him up next year. How do you feel about Sasha moving forward?
I could see Sasha, if he makes a little bit of progress defensively, he plays well without the ball.
In the last 17 games or so?
No, well, you say okay. Big pick. I thought you were talking about beyond this
year.
Yeah,
but I think what I'm saying, Whitey, and let me try to clarify so it's not a misunderstanding. There's a very short period of time he has to prove what he can do for next year. And look, I'm not all saying everything is based upon his game log because, you know, practice, how he operates, like they get to see that, we don't. But I'm just saying from the outside looking in, there's a very short period of time for him to prove to me what he can do. But it's tough because the Kings are in the push. They're mm-hmm. They're in the final lap.
You.
And so with that being said, I kind of have a conundrum, Whitey, of how much can we intertwine Sasha and then also kind of get an understanding of who he is and being ready for next year and where he fits in, because you've been a big proponent. Sasha should be spun for a piece. You know?
That's right. I thought you were going to say, you've been saying he should play.
You know, no, and so am I clarifying that for you enough? Like, I think we're kind of in a gray zone with Sasha right now.
Yeah, no question. I just think, to answer your first question, if I understood it right, big picture,
mm-hmm.
trying to look at it through their eyes, doesn't matter what I think, I still think that they could envision him potentially as being maybe a starter in the front court. Maybe if HB, you know, he's not going to be around forever, and they like HB, but I could see how they would think, look, Sasha, if he can just get acclimated to the NBA level where he's not terrible defensively and he's a plus offensively where other teams have to, like, you can't leave that guy, maybe he could become a starter. Now, you're right, 17 games or what is it, 15 games?
I think it's
whatever
15,
it is now.
Yeah, 15, yeah, 16.
It's
look.
Tough to do. Okay, in 15 games, can you prove you can do that? Can you recover from a sprained ankle and get your conditioning up and then prove to us that you're that guy? That's going to be tough. I think, by the way, you mentioned it's tough for them to work in a new player when you're trying to nail down a playoff spot. I think that's one of the reasons why we haven't seen more of Keon. You know, Will mentioned earlier, he should have been starting all year, and Will may be right. But I think the coaches were looking at it as like, we have to win these games, and maybe Keon's ready, maybe he's not. but we don't have the luxury right now of, you know, fiddling around with it. So he played when he had to play because there were injuries. It's like, well, we got to play him now. And he took advantage of those opportunities. So Sasha, just he's got to make shots. That's his number one thing. You know, that's what it starts with him. What's his main value? He can make shots. So if he can do that, then that changes the whole complexion of his future with the Kings and maybe the rest of the season.
So let me ask you a question. Are you willing to have Sasha come back and let's just say Herter, you know, Herter's gone for a week or two and Sasha jumps back in the end of the road trip. You know, he doesn't play Toronto. He probably doesn't play Washington. Maybe he plays Philadelphia or he comes back and plays Philadelphia or he plays in Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
Are you willing to be okay with Sasha playing 15, 18 minutes, scoring 10 points, have a couple of timely jumpers, but get abused on the defensive end right now?
I'll answer that when we come right back. 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. It's a drive, guys. It's Jay and Whitey. We're going to be hearing from Drapes today at some point as well. It's coming up here on Sacktown Sport. We're trying to find, as best we can, some clarification on Kevin Herter's status. We know that, according to Sean Cunningham, Kevin Herter dislocated his left shoulder last night, so he's out for the foreseeable. Very vague reports. We don't know what the – and that's it's not our right to know what it is. But, you know, we're just trying to figure it out nonetheless. Shoulder injury, we don't know the grade or anything like that. Is it going to require surgery? We don't know. So I've just been doing, which anybody can do, just been – but since we're on the air here, looking this up on some websites. This is from, let's see, NHS, which is the National Health – I don't know. Recovering from a dislocated shoulder, and this, again, these are broad terms, and we don't know specifics. This says it usually takes up to 12 weeks to recover from a dislocated shoulder. It may take up to 16 weeks to fully return to playing some sports, but for some, recovery can take longer. Now, my guess is that is intended for kind of like the average people, mm-hmm. not an elite athlete necessarily.
And you're not getting the treatment down at the G1C.
Yes,
and
yes.
So who knows?
Institute of Sport, Exercise and Health says time frame of recovery of a dislocated shoulder varies depending on the end goal, what the patient is trying to return to, the type of surgery performed, which we don't even know if there's going to be surgery, physical capability of the individual, quality of the rehab. Says athletes involved in collision sports will take much longer, can be out anywhere from 4 and 6 months, depending on the severity of the injury. But I believe from the way that's worded, that's more geared towards like a football player. So you've got an elite athlete. Mm. We won't really know, and maybe they don't know until somebody gets a look in there and can decide, yeah, we can do this. That's, you know, maybe they won't even need surgery. So we really don't know much except that he's not going to be playing for the foreseeable.
The one thing about a dislocated shoulder and, you know, those type of injuries or you don't have a broken bone and we don't, you know, specifics kind of a give and take, an ETA, it really goes on the person's feel. You know, I think that's kind of in my, you know, experiences when you have those type of injuries, you just never know. And I think that's what we're getting to. You just never know. Like, you can't put a time on it. We don't know the severity of it. We have no idea, as you said. You know, I think this is the initial prognostication, you know, diagnosis. And it's kind of a wait and see type situation until we know, you know, any further details. And that we know in this day and time and for what we do, Whitey, that's difficult because, you know, speculation can get the best of some people.
Right.
You know, we can speculate and like, oh, yeah, but he might be okay. He might not. That's the tough part in a microwavable society, especially when we're talking about sports.
Yeah.
It's going to be tough.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure. You know, what happens with the red velvet, but I will say this. For some, it opens the window to get what people have been clamoring for.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the best way for it to happen, but I repeat it. We're getting ready to find out for the people who wanted, you know, Kevin Herter not to start and for someone else to start. And it might not be, you know, I'm pretty sure most people would say Malik Monk. But we're getting ready to have an opportunity to see this team probably for the foreseeable future start someone that's not Kevin Herter.
I still think it really challenges their depth. even if you, you know, there's a lot of people that just felt like Kevin Huerter's getting you nothing, but you never know when he might start making shots again.
Yeah.
And now that doesn't matter. So, again, you already got Trey Lyles out, no Kevin Huerter. This wasn't the deepest team to begin with, so now it's like, Chris Duarte, what do you got, you know?
Step on up.
Yeah. I think as far as, and again, speaking out of school again a little bit, you remember when Brock Purdy got hurt? I know that was the elbow, but my point is this. My understanding is initially they had to wait a little bit for the swelling to go down to see even, okay, what are we dealing with? And we could have something similar here with Kevin Huerter where, you know, the experts may look at it and go, well, we got to wait a little bit so we get a clear picture of what's going on in there. We got to wait for the swelling to go down. I don't know. We're just guessing. Could be one reason why we don't have more details yet.
Yeah, it's one of those injuries. Until you have a full diagnosis, you know, and we understand the team has to put something out, you know, because as quick as we want to talk about it or, you know, have some information for all the listeners, as quick as we turned on our show today and how many times did, you know, we read on the timeline of, What's the prognostication with Kevin Huerter? What's the timeline? It's like, we don't have any information yet.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's something that people want. They want to have an understanding. This is what we do for a living. But unfortunately, this is kind of one of those things. We're just kind of in a holding pattern.
I do know, based on what we can read, once you dislocate a shoulder, you're more prone to future dislocations. Mm-hmm. Soulshine Band says, once you reset the shoulder, it's going to be sore, very tender for a few weeks to a few months. Every single time a guy touches Huerter's shoulder, it's going to be really painful once he's back. And not to in any way, shape, or form make light of that, but Campeau has another Kings injury here. My wife told me about this. Sheena told me about this. I was at the game, so I wasn't able to watch. Draper smashing KD's foot is another Kings injury. Did you hear about that?
I did hear about it. I didn't get to see it because, of course, you know, my chronicles of getting the opposing team's broadcast and not the home broadcast. So
you had Brevin Knight and whoever it is?
A young lady, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Who felt in. But short, okay, it's okay. Half the time, honestly, Whitey, half the time, I'm watching the game on mute anyway. You know,
I know, but it's like, well, you work with Drapes. It's too bad.
I know, I don't want to hear him anyway. If Drapes was here, I'd be like, no, I don't want, as he would, big fella, I want to have to hear you every single day anyway. I'm already hearing you here. No, I love Drapes, man. I would love to. And there's been, I think it was Saturday when I was texting you guys, I believe, or maybe I was texting Drapes. I can't remember. No, I was texting Drapes about the physicality of the game and everything. And I was at one of my friend's house, so I was watching the Kings broadcast because, you know, he's here in Sacramento. And I was like, okay, this is pretty cool. You know, like I get to, you know, because the one thing we have is we have an inside to Drapes, you know, and Drapes is actually one of those guys. We both can confirm this. When you text Drapes, he looks at his phone throughout the game.
Like, yeah, and he'll answer.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
Yeah.
And it's sometimes he'll answer, and I'm like, wait a minute. They're playing, you know, like he's taking a shot. Like someone just took a shot, and I get a text. I'm like, okay, they've been playing the last 2.5 minutes. Did he send this? And you know, the signal just didn't kick in or what? But I heard about it via social network. Did not see it live.
Yeah, boy, that'd be great if we can get hold of that audio.
Let me check it. You know, I'm a whiz for the sound, brother.
Yeah, Sheena said she wasn't entirely sure, but she said, I think he stomped on Katie's foot at one point.
Wow.
It sounds like, yeah. So we don't have an X-ray on that yet. We'll have to check in with Katie.
No. Yeah, we'll have to make sure. I think she'll be on, what, the morning show tomorrow? Or yeah, didn't she come on Wednesdays?
Get an update.
Yeah,
get an update there. 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. Ken joins us on Sacktown Sports. Hello, Ken. What's up?
What's going on, Whitey?
Hey, good to talk with you. Yeah.
I was thinking about the Kings, and Whitey, you would appreciate this because you're an old-time guy. This Kings team reminds me of the 1979 NBA champion Seattle Supersonics.
Wow.
And the reason why I say that is because when I think of the scoring they get from the sixth man, Malik Monk, I think of downtown Freddie Brown. When I think of the dynamic of Gus Williams, I think of De'Aaron Fox.
Are we going Sigma? Are you going Sigma, Ken?
It's Sigma. When you think of Sigma, you think dollar. And so, he was able to do it that team We don't have a Lonnie Shelton, but I think what we do have is a bunch of shooters, and I think that team, this King team, remind me of it. And what I think of the King team is this. They may have difficulty running up a hill. It will sprint up a mountain. And what I mean by that is they may not play. They play down to the level of competition, but when they play upper-level competition, they compete. I think it speaks well for them come playoff time, and I'm expecting them to be challenging to whoever they play. But like I said before, I want them to get the sixth or the fifth seed. I don't want them playing one game and out.
Thank you, Ken. Yeah, of course, those Sonics had, I think they had Dennis Johnson, so a pretty good defender.
Yeah, they had Dennis Johnson. He had 32 in the finals, right, yeah. The OT game.
I don't know if we have a Dennis Johnson. I mean, Keon Ellis is a pretty good defender, but I don't know if we could say Dennis
they beat
Johnson.
The Bullets in that championship?
Yeah.
Ken said 79, right?
Yeah.
That was the year the Sonics won the championship.
Yes.
Okay.
It was the Sonics and the Bullets two years in a row,
right.
And those series were so – other than Ken, not a lot of people were watching. It was after that the NBA playoffs, they started putting them on tape delay like the next year.
Really?
Because you had like the Sixers. You had Julius Erving and the Sixers against Kareem and Magic in the finals, and it was on tape. You had to stay up to like 11:30 at night to watch it.
Oof.
Because NBA ratings were so low.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because of the Bullets and
the Sonics. But the Sonics got it done.
I love it.
If Ken sees these Kings
and
the like of the 79 Sonics, that means a championship
is
coming.
That's good. Yes, that's good news.
Gus Johnson.
Gus Williams, yeah. Last night, one of the great nights in the history of the dunk. Next with the Drive Guys on Sactown Sports. Jay and Whitey today, Kyle Draper traveling with the team. He should be joining us at some point because, I mean, he's got to deliver his Drapes takes, which he lives for. So we have that coming up here. Last night, as you know, if you're a basketball fan, was a tremendous night in the history of dunking. Now, obviously, in the radio, we can't look at them, but we can hear what some of those great dunks sounded like, and we'll get to those. Unbelievable night in dunking. Before we get to that, on the chat here, an interesting comment from Compio. Compio disagrees with me. He would never disagree with Drapes, but he disagrees with me. We're talking about the depth of the team, Jay. And I appreciate this comment. Compio says, Whitey, I don't agree. I think the Kings have proven they are deep. Many players have received minutes this season. We have debates about Mitchell, Duarte, Ellis, Lynn, McGee, Edwards getting time. Compio, I don't know if I can meet you halfway. I just don't think, the best I could say is, I don't think we know for sure that the Kings have depth or not. Some of these guys like Duarte, when the Kings brought him here, clearly they envisioned a bigger role than what we've seen so far. Now, he's been hurt some, and obviously that's no one's fault, but and now he's going to get a chance to play. I just don't know. Kessler Edwards, last year when they got him, he started a little, and then they didn't play him.
Mm.
So you may be right, but I think it's fair to say that we don't know for sure whether the Kings have depth or not right now. Davion's a great example. Davion has shown flashes, but has he found it? Is he a guy you can rely on to play really good defense and then shoot the ball reasonably well? A lot of times this year he has been. I just think there's still a lot of questions about the Kings' depth.
Yeah, I'm more in accordance with you, and I get what Compio was saying, but I'm like you. I think out of necessity and the Kings trying to find someone or find a piece or find the rhythm, find the combination, we've seen, you know, a bunch of guys. There was a stint where JaVale McGee played, you know, quite a bit. We've seen some stints with Alex Lynn, which kind of seems like it's circling around. We've seen Davion hit the bench, and we couldn't even find him at one point in time. Yeah, so I'm with you. I think out of necessity and out of things that they were trying to look for, we've seen a lot of people play. But I'm with you. I don't think there's enough of that that you can rely on moving forward.
Yeah, and I said the depth will be tested, and it is. You got two of your rotation pieces now that are out. Lyles is out. Hopefully we'll be back soon. Kevin Huerter with the dislocated shoulder. That announcement was made this afternoon. I mean, so that's any team is going to feel. You have two of your rotation guys that are out. Any team is going to feel that. So the Kings' depth will be tested. Yeah, to your point. I mean, if Sasha is ready to go and he starts making shots, then okay, the depth is there. I just don't think we know for sure. Last night, I have to give Matt George credit. The legendary Matt George used to work here because we had a couple of
legendary?
Well, Maybe I overstated.
Yeah, yeah. Well, stop that.
He's a nice guy.
No disrespect, but we can't be throwing around legendary like that, brother. You know, like solid cat, but legendary is big time.
He's a solid cat. Yeah,
like we use the word great and legends too much. You're a legend. And I in all due respect, you're a legend. You've been around for a long time. I know you shake your head. You don't want to, you know, you want to dust your shoulders off like you're a little boozy and all that.
Yeah.
But Whitey, you're a legend, man. You've been in this for a long time. You've raised young pups. People have been, as a child, have grown up listening to your voice around this area to now they're adults with their own children.
Uh-huh.
That's legendary, brother. That's legendary.
So you're saying Matt George doesn't qualify for
that? He's not a legend, man. And you could tell him, I'll call him and text him and whatever. He's not a legend.
What'd you say?
And I would pretty sure he's not. He would tell you he's not legendary.
Well, he had a great tweet last night.
There you go. A legendary tweet.
A legendary tweet.
How about that?
And we're going to play the cutscene. Before we do, there was two great dunks last night. And Matt George on Twitter said, wow, with two great dunks tonight, that means we're due to get a great dunk from Malik.
Yeah.
We end up getting more than that, which we'll get to. We'll start with the first one is Minnesota playing, let's see, they were playing Utah, right? Anthony Edwards put down a dunk on John Collins. It's one of those dunks where if you haven't seen it, you have to see it. Because there are very few. It's one of those dunks, like, I don't know if I've ever seen one like that. This is what it sounded like.
Warren did not score and only had one shot attempt in that first half. Another turnover for Utah. Edwards gets it back and threw it down. And one from the rafters.
Yeah, the great thing was one of his teammates got the ball and Edwards comes down and he gives it back to him and he takes off. And just, I think that's, Jay, what made it special, as the announcer said. I mean, the great thing is you hear there's nothing there, and then there's just this explosion of sound because he goes up and he threw the ball through the hoop from, I don't know, 12 feet high, whatever he was.
Yeah, it kind of, I'm pretty sure we've all seen this, the Blake Griffin dunk where he kind of throw, like it's almost Space Jam as she's reaching over, and I don't remember who he was dunking on it right now. I don't know. I forgot. But he kind of throws it in the hoop.
Yes.
This is close, but Anthony touches the rim, like he hits his finger, his hand on the rim. So he threw it in, but it looked more like a dunk compared to where Blake Griffin kind of, you know, launched and pushed it in.
Yeah, I wish there were a way to measure velocity on dunks.
Because
that had the velo was very high on that particular dunk.
Man.
Yeah, it was absolutely breathtaking. Then we had Jalen Johnson of the Hawks. Doing this, you hate to see it happen to a nice guy like Austin.
Not me.
And LeBron has his pocket picked right away.
Man, who was that?
Jalen Johnson. He goes right up and over Austin Reeves.
Oh, my goodness.
What a way to start the game.
So that would have been our buddies with the Hawks, right? That would have been, I think that's Dominique and Bob Rathbun, maybe?
Yeah, that is. You got it. Come on now.
Yeah, that was a tremendous dunk. So, yes.
The first play of the game. Jump ball. Ball's going towards the Lakers. They get a steal going back the other way.
Jay, that doesn't make you a little sad to see that happen to a nice kid like
Absolutely not. I do it 10 more times. I don't know if Austin Reeves is a nice kid. You know Austin Reeves?
No, I was just glad to see it.
Look, man.
It's not his fault, but I thought, you know, he's kind of overexposed. Oh, Austin Reeves, Country Mamba.
Man.
So I was always delighted in seeing somebody dunk on his face.
I only speak on stuff I know, Whitey. I don't know Austin Reeves. I don't know if he's a good dude. I don't know how he treat people. I'm not calling him a nice dude. He got dunked on.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to say.
He's no Matt George, is he?
He's no Matt George. Silent cat.
So Matt George, after those dunks, he tweets that, hey, we may see a Malik dunk, an exciting Malik dunk tonight. Well, we saw more than one, didn't we, last night?
Bane drives, puts up a shot, rejected inside. Keon Ellis, Alex Len there. King set up the alley-oop in transition, and what a finish on the throwdown. Malik Monk on the receiving end of a Fox setup pass.
That was incredible.
Dude, he got up there.
We got to get Malik in the dunk contest if he has any interest in it.
I feel like I was saying this. I felt like Malik was going to be a part of one, or he was, or something. I didn't take the time to do the research, but I felt like he was going to be or something a couple years ago.
I can check on it. Let's see. Malik Monk won the first ever dunk contest at the Bass Pro Tournament of Champions in Springfield, Massachusetts.
That's high school stuff right there.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see. So I guess maybe he was in a dunk contest much earlier in his career.
Well, I thought he was like his name was being mentioned as someone that was going to be in a dunk contest.
I didn't know he was that kind of dunker.
We need to get him on to have this conversation.
Yes.
I felt like he threw his name in a hat or something.
We need to have the King of the Kings on the show.
Yes, very true. I like that.
Definitely do. That was only
King
one of
the
his,
Kings.
Yeah, only one of his great dunks last night.
In transition, he finds Malik Monk in the left corner, attacks the baseline, goes off the bounce for a big-time whip with the right hand. You talk about explosiveness. Malik Monk with a two-hand throwdown. It wasn't just the right. He had both hands on the ball.
The thing about Monk's dunks is you don't see him coming, and he's in the air, and then something happens in the blink of an eye. He has a ferocity that comes with how quickly he catches it and throws it down.
Yeah.
It wasn't the first one, like, the alley-oop, was that behind his head?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, he went and got that thing.
Yeah.
One thing about it is I didn't, prior to him coming to Sacramento, I'm with you, I didn't know he had them type of boosties.
I feel like, foolish, but there. I didn't know.
Yeah, I mean, that dude, he has vert. He's got a jump, a vertical leap, man, and it's quick.
Yeah,
like,
that's
very,
it.
Very quick.
Yeah, it's hard sometimes when you see a dunk, you have this visceral reaction, like, that's amazing, but it's like, I'm not sure why. And with Malik, I think that's it. There's a quickness, like when everything's fine, and then, whoa,
yeah.
What was that?
Right, very
it happened
quick.
So fast. Anthony Edwards, it was the throwdown that was so thunderous and quick.
Mm-hmm.
Could you play that one again? That was a great, I just love the way there's, it's like, it's a basketball game, and then, ah!
Oh, have you ever tried to do a play-by-play?
Oh, I did a little bit in college.
Did you?
Yeah.
For?
Yeah. For the SF State Gators.
Ooh, yeah. I like that. I like that.
Yeah, it was fun, but I had, you know, more opportunities doing this stuff. So here is that great dunk.
Warren did not score and only had one shot attempt in that first half. Another turnover for Utah. Edwards gets it back and threw it down. And one from the rafters.
From the rafters. Yeah. No one saw it coming.
Mm-mm.
I think that's one of the problems with dunk contests, Jay. It's like you sit back with your arms folded. Okay, dunk. And you know they're going to dunk. And the thing about the best dunks in games is you don't know what's going to happen until, whoa.
Yeah. Unseen.
Right?
Yeah.
The element
not
of surprise.
Yeah, of course. Of course. And But I will say there is something to that with the dunk contest where – you know, like, okay, we're kind of all, and you know this, Whitey, sometimes your anticipation lets you down because of the dunk. It's like, oh, okay.
Yes.
Yeah, that was all right. But as we've seen with the Vince Carters, the Zach Levines, the Aaron Gordons, when there is something that's spectacular, you're like, oh, my goodness, because we're all looking at you. We're all expecting, you know, you to do something fantastic. And when you can really deliver, it's something, man.
Hey, stick around, whatever you do, because Drapes is going to join us at some point. Jerry Reynolds with us, bottom of the hour.
Now, that's a legend.
Yeah.
That's legendary. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, I'm glad
you
did. But
that's legendary.
It needed to be said.
Yes.
Yes. When we come back, looks like Keon's a starter, so now what? Next, with the Drive Guys on Sacktown Sports.